This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, President Obama speaks out about a winning fight against Islamic State. Libya gets set for a national unity government. U.S. Republican presidential contenders prepare for another televised debate.
The Trump Show continues. What will be interesting about debate number 5 in Las Vegas is we're seeing the rise now of a conservative challenger to Trump in the polls, and that would be Texas Senator Ted Cruz.
American country music stars head into the new year with big awards on their minds. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. President Obama says he is confident the U.S.-led coalition will prevail in its battle against the Islamic State. Speaking at the Pentagon Monday following a meeting with his national security team, Mr. Obama said the Islamic State is losing ground.
Last month in November, we dropped more bombs on ISIL targets than any other month since this campaign started. We're also taking out ISIL leaders, commanders, and killers, one by one.
And he reaffirmed the U.S. will continue to lead the global coalition in the effort.
Our strategy is moving forward with a great sense of urgency on four fronts. Hunting down and taking out these terrorists, training and equipping Iraqi and Syrian forces to fight ISIL on the ground, stopping ISIL's operations by disrupting the recruiting, financing, and propaganda, and finally, persistent diplomacy to end the Syrian civil war so that everyone can focus on destroying ISIL.
President Obama said Islamic State has lost thousands of kilometers of ground in Syria and Iraq. Social media is busy reacting to Mr. Obama's remarks. International Edition social media correspondent G. Abby Lee has the day off. Jim Stevenson is here to pinch hit and fill us in. Hi, Jim.
Hello, Ray. Well, the White House has definitely been on social media talking about President Obama's visit to the Pentagon to speak and meet with advisors on the battle against Islamic State, both in Syria and in Iraq. The official White House Twitter account posted, "Watch at POTUS give an update on our fight against ISIL from the Pentagon," and they gave a link where you could click and go to watch the president and hear him speak. Also, as the president spoke, an updated tweet was sent out by the White House, quote, "We're taking out ISIL leaders, commanders, and killers one by one," and it was signed at POTUS, with a link to go to more information on the story. But, Ray, it also included a graphic illustrating what the White House and the Pentagon says have been accomplished so far in the fight. In that graphic, they said that more than 8,860 airstrikes have been conducted by U.S. and international allies, and they even broke it down, more than 5,800 in Iraq and more than 3,000 in Syria.
Well, the numbers are always interesting. Did the White House offer any other evidence of how the war on Islamic State is moving forward?
Yeah, actually, Ray, they did send out another tweet, quote, "In November, we dropped more bombs on ISIL targets than in any other month since this campaign started." That also signed by at POTUS, which stands for President of the United States. That tweet was accompanied by yet another infographic where they listed a whole range of things that they're doing to disrupt Islamic State, like providing training and equipment to Iraqi and Syrian forces fighting on the ground, continuing military campaigns to hunt down terrorist plotters in any country necessary, stopping operations of Islamic State by disrupting plots and cutting off financing and preventing recruitment of more fighters. Now, interestingly, Ray, a well-known journalist right here in Washington, Gwen Ifill of Public Broadcasting's NewsHour, picked up on Defense Secretary Ashton Carter's observation about Islamic State. She writes on Twitter, "SecDef Ash Carter calls ISIL our first every social media enemy." Now, social media has been a widely used tool by Islamic State to promote its ideology, primarily to recruit new followers, and it's had a lot of success in that area. And of course, it's a tool the rest of the world opposed to it, like the United States, would like to counter, if not silence.
Thanks, Jim. You can follow Jim at VOA Stevenson. Our Twitter account is always available for the very latest in developments. And you can follow us at VOA_IE. G will return to our program tomorrow, but you can always find her at G Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
This is VOA's International Edition. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry heads to Moscow Tuesday for talks with Russian leaders on the political process leading to a possible solution to the Syrian conflict. Mr. Kerry was in Paris Monday to join up with foreign ministers from European and Arab nations for the latest talks on the battle against Islamic State and efforts to end the almost five-year-long Syrian civil war. International Edition Susan Yockey talked with VOA's Pam Dawkins about what Secretary Kerry and the others hope to accomplish.
They're trying to come to terms ahead of what's expected to be a Friday meeting of the International Syria Support Group. It's expected to be in New York. Now, this is a group that has had two rounds of talks in Vienna, and it's looking for a political transition in Syria that would involve the Assad regime and also the moderate Syrian opposition.
Well, the next stop on his tour is Russia, and I know you'll be going with him. What is expected for that leg of his trip?
Well, Syria is part of the agenda. One of the main focal points for Kerry's meeting with his counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, and also with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Of course, there have been ongoing differences between the United States and Russia in terms of their approach to Syria. The Russian government says that has been supportive of President Bashar al-Assad, whereas the U.S. and some of its allies are saying Assad must go and must not be part of any long-term transition. There are also differences on airstrikes, with the U.S. urging Russia to limit its airstrikes in Syria to Islamic State militant targets. These are some of the issues that are going to be discussed. Also, Russia is, of course, part of this international Syria support group, as is the United States. And the two will try to come to terms on ways to move this process forward.
That's VOA's Pam Dawkins speaking with International Edition Susan Yockey. United Nations mediated efforts to bring an end to years of conflict and chaos in Libya received a boost with international support for an agreement expected to be signed on Wednesday in Morocco on a national unity government. The plan calls for the unity body to be formed within 40 days with members of both the current internationally recognized government based in Tobruk and the Islamist-backed body that has been operating out of Tripoli. International Edition's Victor Beatty is here with us following developments.
Representatives of 17 nations and four world organizations gathered in Rome Sunday amid growing concern over the presence of as many as 3,000 Islamic State fighters in that North African country. Among the diplomats taking part was U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
We cannot allow the status quo in Libya to continue. It is dangerous for the viability of Libya. It is dangerous for Libyans. And now, because of the increased presence of Daesh purposefully migrating there, it is dangerous for everyone. We are determined to make the most of the fact that the majority of the House of Representatives and a majority of the GNC have come together ready to sign an agreement, and they refuse any longer to be blocked by one or two people or by the individual politics. They are determined to speak and move forward for Libya, and we are determined to support them in that effort.
Kerry said the Rome Communique agreed to calls on all parties to accept an immediate and comprehensive ceasefire and pledged international security and economic support to the proposed Government of National Accord.
Regional analyst Stephen Zunis of the University of San Francisco told me the regional threat posed by the growing IS presence in Libya appears to have given the international community a sense of urgency to end Libya's turmoil.
The rise of the Islamic State in Libya has certainly been a motivating factor in getting a number of major powers involved in this process. Within Libya itself, there seems to be a hurting stalemate where the rival factions are recognizing that neither of them can win a military victory and that some kind of compromise may be possible. And the hope is that between the desire by the factions themselves to try to resolve the situation and pressure from foreign governments, they may be able to get some kind of national unity government that can end the bulk of the fighting and unite the country against the threat of ISIS.
As you know, of course, Libya has been on a downward spiral as far as security is concerned. Is there a possibility of bridging the huge gap that exists between Tripoli and the Eastern administration?
It's certainly possible, especially given the alternatives, or even just the status quo, is pretty bad. The problem is that when you have over 300,000 men under arms in a country that is barely 6 million, and you don't have a unified government, it makes it very easy for factionalism, whether it be regional, tribal, ideological, or anything else, to scuttle any attempt at unity. And so even though this agreement on paper looks quite promising, as we've seen in other multi-sided civil wars, whether it be Lebanon or Liberia or anything else, this may be the first of a number of such failed attempts.
Well, Stephen, as you know, that North African country has no democratic tradition. Muammar Gaddafi ruling it with an iron fist for more than 40 years. Is it possible to build those institutions?
When they had their one free nationwide election, not long after Gaddafi's overthrow, a moderate pro-democracy party has got the majority. And so there clearly is a willingness or a desire among the Libyan people for some semblance of democracy and stability and rule of law. Certainly there is a desire for a democratic, stable system. And the chaos of recent years, I think, has only strengthened that desire.
At the same time, writing in the U.S. publication Politico, former Italian Foreign Minister Emma Bonino and the president and CEO of International Crisis Group, Jean-Marie Guaynaud, warned against rushing into a new Libyan deal. They argued the agreement is opposed by leaders of the rival parliaments, and they urge adopting modest changes from an alternative plan to make it more acceptable to those parties.
Thank you, Victor. International Edition's Victor Beatty. Coming up, a preview of the next U.S. Republican Party presidential debate. This is VOA.
This is Greenbee for a healthier planet.
Most electric cars need a charge after just 300 or 400 kilometers, but not the new fuel cell vehicles like Hyundai's iX35, which powers its electric motor with hydrogen. Hyundai recently showed off its newest model on nearly every street in London. Laura King is Senior Manager of Public Relations.
So we've driven, photographed, and filmed every single street in central London, as defined by the world-famous Cabby Knowledge, and that's actually over 2,000 miles.
The iX35 can reach a maximum speed of 160 kilometers per hour. Here's Robin Hales of Hyundai.
The only difference between this and an electric car is that this produces its own electricity on board, so it doesn't need to be plugged in.
Hyundai's iX35 fuel cell holds the record for the longest trip on a single tank of hydrogen. Hydrogen fuel stations, though, are far and few between. Only about a dozen stations in the United States have hydrogen, nearly all of them in California. I'm Rebecca Ward for VOA's Green Beat.
You are listening to VOA's International Edition. Nine Republican presidential contenders will be on stage Tuesday night in Las Vegas, Nevada, in the fifth Republican presidential debate. This latest face-off comes amid public concerns about terrorism and national security, and new poll numbers that buttress the campaigns of billionaire real estate developer Donald Trump and Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Mr. Trump continues to lead in national polls, but Senator Cruz is surging in Iowa, the state that begins the presidential party selection process with its caucus voting on February 1st. International Edition's Jim Stevenson spoke with VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone.
The Trump Show continues. What will be interesting about debate number five in Las Vegas is we're seeing the rise now of a conservative challenger to Trump in the polls, and that would be Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Cruz is not only coming up in some of the national polls, getting closer to Trump, he's actually surging in the first state to vote, which is Iowa. And in one poll, the Des Moines Register poll, is up by 10 points over Trump, 31 to 21. That is somewhat significant. That particular poll gets a lot of credence in Iowa. And what we don't know is if Trump's facade is pierced in Iowa in that first vote of February 1st, how might that affect how the rest of the primary battles go for Donald Trump? Because at every campaign stop, he loves to boast that he's leading not only in the national polls, but in all the state polls. We now see the rise of Ted Cruz, something to watch for this debate.
Ted Cruz, after the last debate, talked about being on a parallel track toward the nomination where he was on the far right all by himself. And then there was everybody else kind of in the middle battling it out. And then they would kind of come to the very end and he felt like he would be able to prevail.
And in order for him to prevail, though, he certainly does not want to offend Donald Trump or Ben Carson, another social conservative in the race who has a lot of religious followers. And in order to get the supporters from those two, according to Cruz, he will not attack them. He will not speak ill of them because he wants to inherit those supporters, assuming that somewhere along the line, both Trump and Carson falter. Well, the polls, the latest polls show that Carson may be faltering now. He's plummeted down in Iowa now to about fourth. He was leading just a couple of months ago. So what'll be interesting now is this dynamic where Cruz is starting to be attacked by Trump on the campaign trail. How will he respond? So far, he's not taking the bait. And again, he needs to be careful. He doesn't want to offend those Trump followers who so far have been pretty loyal to the Donald.
And the two were going back and forth quite a bit on social media through Twitter, taking jabs at each other. Donald Trump, for his comments, wanting to ban all Muslims coming into the United States, has taken an incredible amount of heat. Trump has alluded to the fact that, well, you know what? If you don't like me, I'll run as an independent.
Yeah, and that is a threat, once again, that hangs over the Republican Party. They realize it. I think some of them are concerned about it. But some of the establishment figures are equally concerned that Trump could wind up being the nominee and could lead to an easy Democratic victory in November of 2016. So, again, we have Trump playing this really interesting role, wielding a lot of influence right now. We don't know who's going to emerge from the pack of Republicans to be that one alternative. And I think this Tuesday debate will also illuminate some of the issues at play. Is it going to be someone like a Jeb Bush, who has not done well in the polls? Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, who's coming on in New Hampshire, according to the latest surveys? Marco Rubio, who many consider a strong potential contender for the mainstream mantle in the party? There are kind of separate battles here among the conservatives to see who's the king of that hill, and then the mainstream or establishment types to see who would emerge as the leader there.
VOA senior political correspondent Jim Malone speaking with International Edition's Jim Stevenson. Regional elections in France show some surprises. The far-right National Front Party failed to make gains despite coming out on top in the first round of voting. Tactical voting by National Front opponents helped to keep them out of power, as Henry Ridgewell reports.
Supporters of the National Front made their feelings clear as results trickled in from across France. Despite winning 6 out of 13 regions in the first round, the party failed to gain control of any of the 13 regions in Sunday's final vote. But analyst Marta Lorimer of the London School of Economics says it was still a significant result.
At the same time, they have gained the highest number of votes in their history. It's a party that has a 40-year history, and they just reached almost 7 million votes.
National Front leader Marine Le Pen struck a defiant tone.
Les mondialistes
She said the global elite is acting for the dilution of France and its people in a huge worldwide melting pot. She went on to say, "We patriots hope that the nation constitutes the most protective space for the French." France remains officially in a state of emergency, almost a month after the Islamic State-inspired terror attacks across Paris that left 130 people dead. But fear of Islamist terrorism does not explain the National Front's rise, says Lorimer.
They are winning a lot in regions that historically voted for the Communist Party and for the far left. A lot of people who don't win from globalization, who may not be patriots, but who are still feeling that things were better when it was just about France and not about Europe or the world.
Marine Le Pen promised supporters that her party would return stronger in 2017 when she hopes to challenge for the French presidency. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Serena Williams was named Sports Person of the Year by the premier sports magazine in the United States, Sports Illustrated. Williams is 34 years old and defied her age in 2015, winning 53 matches and losing only three. While taking three of the four major tennis tournaments, the Australian and French Opens and Wimbledon. She fell short of requests for the calendar year Grand Slam when she lost in the semifinals of the U.S. Open in September. For 6 weeks earlier this year, Serena Williams achieved a first in the history of the Women's Tennis Association rankings. She compiled so many ratings points that she had twice as many as the world number two. Which country's songs and artists could get Grammy Awards next year? It's an impressive list. International edition Sarah Williams and Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong are here to tell us about it.
The Grammy nominations are out, and country music is abuzz about the surprises and potential winners, especially in some of the categories like Best Country Album, Best Country Solo Performance, and Best Country Duo Group Performance. Nikki Strong of VOA Music is here to fill us in on the nominations, give us some predictions, and share the responses of some of the contenders themselves. So, Nikki, who are some of the surprise nominees for Best Country Album?
Okay, so the nominees are Sam Hunt, Montevallo, Little Big Town, Painkiller, Ashley Monroe, The Blade, Kacey Musgraves, Pageant Material, and Chris Stapleton, Traveler. Now, there's no real surprises, per se, in terms of who got nominated. The hardest part of this category is seeing who will win, because all of the albums were great and popular among the critics. And even though Chris Stapleton is hot right now, we'll see how he fares up against Ashley Monroe and Kacey Musgraves, who will definitely give him a run for his money among Grammy voters. And I thought it was funny that Chris Stapleton said he was trying to watch the Grammy announcements on TV, but missed it because he was on the wrong channel, Sarah.
Oh, no.
He said he had to look it up online like so many of us did. Go figure.
Yeah. Well, what about Best Country Solo Performance?
Okay, so the nominees in this category include Cam, Burning House, Traveler by Chris Stapleton, Little Toy Guns by Carrie Underwood, John Cougar, John Deere, John 316 by Keith Urban, and Chances Are Leanne Womack. Now that everyone is abuzz about Chris Stapleton, Cam and Leanne Womack are the underdogs here, because Leanne's album is like what Chris Stapleton's was, the one that fans and critics loved but did not receive airplay. And Cam is a newcomer whose song Burning House is actually one of my personal favorites and is a top 10 hit on the charts. And Cam, which I thought was funny, she responded in disbelief. She just posted on Facebook, wait, will you guys double check this? Am I actually nominated for a Grammy? So I'm personally rooting for Leanne or Chris Stapleton, but I would be equally ecstatic if Cam actually won.
Well, tell us about the Best Country Duo Group Performance category.
Okay, so the nominees are Stay a Little Longer by Brothers Osborne, If I Needed You, Joey and Rory, The Driver, Charles Kelly, Dierks Bentley and Eric Paisley, Girl Crush, Little Big Town, and Lonely Tonight, Blake Shelton and Ashley Monroe. The big surprise here was Joey and Rory, If I Needed You. It's a touching song about the arrival of their newborn last year. The entire year has been very emotional for these two as they have been blogging and documenting Rory's bout with terminal cancer. Currently, they have decided to stop all treatment, and she is in hospice. So everyone connected to country music has been rallying around them and keeping them in prayer. So it was a precious surprise to them. Joey, wrote on Facebook, "Woke my bride up this morning with a baby in my arms and the news that our version of If I Needed You was nominated for a Grammy. As her excitement and tears flowed into mine, she said, 'How can that be?' The song received no airplay, no press, no critical acclaim, and the only music video we made for it was to celebrate the day our little Indiana was born. God is so good. Thank you, thank you, thank you." And even though If I Needed You is a beautiful, touching song, many predict that the commercial success of Little Big Town's Girl Crush will result in their winning the actual award. And Little Big Town, by the way, is up for 4 nominations overall, along with Chris Stapleton. And they posted that they were thrilled to represent country music at the Grammys, especially in the all-genre category Song of the Year for Girl Crush.
You can hear the music of these country Grammy nominees and more on Country Hits USA with Nikki Strong on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki Strong on Facebook and Twitter at I Am Nikki Strong or through VOA Music on Facebook and at VOA _ Music on Twitter. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
I got a girl crush. Hate to admit it, but I got it's slowing down.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news, features, videos, and podcasts at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As the Helsinki Final Act marks its 40th anniversary, it is critical that all members of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe remain faithful to its core principles. These principles include recognizing the inherent dignity and human rights of every person, respecting the sovereignty and territorial integrity of every participating state, and refraining from the threat or use of force across the OSCE region. In light of these commitments, the United States renews its call for Russia and the separatists that it backs to fully implement the Minsk agreements to which Moscow is a signatory. This includes the removal of Russian forces and equipment from eastern Ukraine and unfettered access for OSCE monitors. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has emphasized the importance of the Minsk agreement's provision for local elections in the Donbas region of eastern Ukraine to be carried out under Ukrainian law and subject to monitoring by the OSCE Office for Democratic Institutions and Human Rights. There must also be a return to Ukrainian control of the border and the release of all hostages detained for politically motivated reasons. Meanwhile, Ukraine needs to do its part by withdrawing its heavy weapons and to negotiate in good faith the Donbas election procedures. This is a time for concrete steps, said Secretary Kerry at the recent OSCE ministerial meeting in Serbia, and to avoid what is a disastrous but unnecessary conflict, and to begin the process of rebuilding Ukraine's east. Elsewhere in the OSCE, protracted conflicts continue in places like Moldova's breakaway region of Transnistria, Georgia, and Nagorno-Karabakh. The protection of human rights and fundamental freedoms throughout the OSCE region continues to be a priority. In too many countries, said Secretary Kerry, non-governmental organizations are being restricted by new laws. Journalism is under attack and the freedom of expression, including the media, is in jeopardy, sometimes by threat of force. There is no acceptable excuse for abusing the rights of citizens, for preventing journalists from doing their jobs, or from silencing legitimate political dissent. I hope that we will all reaffirm these fundamental ideals, said Secretary Kerry. The enduring promise of Helsinki should inspire all of us to tackle these shared challenges with renewed urgency and to continue our efforts in building a Europe and a Eurasia that is whole and free and at peace.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.